Welcome to Brave New Bookshelf, a podcast that explores the fascinating intersection of AI and authorship. Join hosts Steph Padonis and Danica Favorite as they dive into thought-provoking discussions, debunk myths, and highlight the transformative role of AI in the publishing industry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Brave New Bookshelf. I'm one of your co-hosts, Steph Padonis, CTO of Future Fiction Academy, where we teach authors how to use AI in any part of their process. The area behind me is different than usual. I'm at the beach house for a little while one of my kids is traveling in Europe and the other one just got her wisdom teeth out. So we're enjoying some downtime at the beach, convalescing and relaxing and trying to get some sun. It was very rainy here the last few days. I'm hoping for better later on today. And we are recording a few of these episodes during the summer before we release them in the fall. So I'm excited to bank a few of these and meet our awesome guests and then get to see them again in the fall as we roll through September and into the final quarter of the year. Oh my God, where's 2025 gone? It's like summer started like June. My husband's like, summer's almost over. I said, stop rushing it. Don't rush it. We don't want to rush through all these things because that's where all the good times happen. And good times have been happening. I'm excited to see my good friend Danica again because she's been traveling. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Our last podcast, I was in the throes of this horrible summer cold. It is a week later. I am still recovering. Like Steph was saying, the summer just flies by and you're go, 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 go. And so I am definitely suffering the effects of that. I was just saying in the preview, when we were talking backstage, I don't get sick very often. And so when I do, it is a doozy. And this really is like the effects of not resting and not taking some time for myself to just rest. And I think that is something, I know that is not the topic of today, but it has been coming up in our circles lately. So we definitely are going to be talking about that in the future. For today, I'm very excited about today's guest. Actually, I'll pause there because I need to introduce myself for those of you who don't know me. I'm Danica Favorite. I'm the community manager at PublishDrive, where we help authors at every stage of the journey, from formatting their manuscript to finding the right keywords and book descriptions and metadata to getting your book published and out to as wide of an audience as possible. And finally, for tracking your sales data and splitting royalties and all of that. And then, of course, Steph and the amazing people at the FFA can help you write that book. So between the two of us, we have everything you need to move forward on your publishing journey. And what's exciting about today's guest is this is one more piece of the puzzle that people are always asking about. And I'm really excited we get to deliver this today. Today I have Erin Servais with us, and she is an editor. Yes, guys, we have it. Woo! Finally, we've got someone to talk about editing and using AI, and really super excited about this. I have to tell the story because when Steph and I first sat down to put this podcast together, we made like a list of our dream guests, and Erin was on that list. And Steph said to me, you've got to meet Erin. She's great, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't know Erin. And I was like, okay, cool. So she was on the list of people we'll get to eventually, but I haven't met them. So I have to find a way to meet them. And then I was at the IBPA conference in Minneapolis, and this woman comes up to me and she's, hi, I'm Erin. And we start talking. She's, I love your podcast, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And then she introduced herself and I was like, oh, we've been wanting to have you as a guest. And very pleased that worked out because, as you are going to find out from this conversation, Erin is absolutely delightful and super, super excited to have her because in the AI for Authors group, people ask about how to use AI for editing almost every day. Here we have a professional editor actually coming in to talk about that. I know there's all this fear of can AI edit? Is it taking editors' jobs? All of this stuff. And Erin, number one, is embracing AI. But number two, she helps other editors use AI in their process, which I think is really amazing and great. And so, without further ado, I'm going to turn things over to Erin Servais, and she is going to tell us all about herself, and then we'll get into today's discussion.
Thank you, Danica. I think, officially blushing from that introduction, and I feel honored to be on this list. I was not aware that I was on that. Thank you for that, for thinking of me for that. My name is Erin Servais, and as mentioned, I do teach editors how to use artificial intelligence. In 2023, I started my company, AI for Editors, and I've been going very strong since then, not taking breaks for rest like I should in vacation, like I want to, because this has been a topic that people have been really eager to learn about and driven to learn about. So, since summer of 2023, I've been going strong. I have a course that I teach. I now have two levels of it, an introductory AI for editors and advanced AI for editors that anyone can sign up for. I teach any and every type of editor, editing any and every type of content that I could ever imagine. From, I haven't checked recently, but the last time I did check, it was over 20 countries. I wonder what it is now across the world who's taken my course. So it's been quite popular, and which has been a wonderful experience and wonderful to be able to bring this knowledge and very important upskilling and reskilling information to people. And then last year, I started a spin-off of that company called Servais Strategic Business Solutions, which does custom trainings for companies and organizations, teaching them how to use AI for editing and content creation, content analysis and development that is based in the types of text that they work on within their groups.
I love this because you know how we ran across each other. It was on LinkedIn, like of all places. LinkedIn decided one day to serve me your content, which is great because it actually knew that I liked AI stuff and I was looking for AI, other people who use AI like I do. And it served me your content. And I was like, hey, this is great because you know what? As authors, especially if you're writing fiction and you're self-published, you actually have to have some sort of editing chops in order to get your book to a point where it's readable, it's understandable. Like even if you can just get it to a point where you can hand it off to an editor and the editor can also read it and understand it and then make those fine-tuning choices and whatnot, you have to build up those skills as an author. And a lot of authors struggle with that part of the process. They love the creation and the brainstorming and the writing of the prose and everything. And then they finish the book and they're like, oh, wait, I have to edit this now. So we see that a lot.
This is so timely for me and so important because seriously, this is why I stayed trad for as long as I did. Like, this is honest Danica talk right here. I hate editing so much, and I was hiring editors and spending a fortune on them, to be honest, and still getting comments back from readers, this was poorly edited. And I'm like, what the heck? And so it was just easier having trad books because they just handle that for you. And then the publisher gets those what the heck emails. There you go, real talk. But I do, I have so many books. We were talking about how I've finished a couple of AI books. They're all sitting on my hard drive, guys, because the editing part is such a challenge for me. And I love that because I don't love that for myself because I have these books sitting on my hard drive. But it's important because, like I was saying in the intro, we have people every day in the AI group saying, hey, how do you edit? How do you use AI for editing? And then there's also the concern of what about human editors? And for me, I really love that Erin obviously is a human editor and she's teaching people how to combine that human and AI editing. So let's just get started with the first question about how you're approaching AI and publishing. Like you said, you saw this summer 2023 and were like, okay, I've got to get in on this. As an editor, what were your thoughts on AI coming onto the scene and what you wanted to do about that?
The last time I checked, I could verify myself as a human. So I'm going to assume that's still the case. The question was how I, one more time, how did, what was your, the question?
It was, how are you approaching AI in
How am
publishing?
I approaching AI? With a combination of human and AI, verifiable human and AI, because those are the human part is absolutely essential to the process. And I see it remaining that way for as long as I can project into the future. These days, it might be a little different than what I would have said before 2022, how far I could predict, but we're still extremely integral to the editing process. When verifiably human people use AI for editing, that means that they're letting the machines excel at what machines are good at while reserving humans for what humans are good at. And I know you both can do incredibly creative and imaginative things with AI in your writing, but thinking about the average user and how they may use AI for editing, that looks something more like leaning on AI to do those rote, tedious tasks with editing. Maybe some ideation, like coming up with chapter title ideas, things like that. But humans bring to it this creativity, our creativity and our decision making, which is so important. We want to be the ones still involved making those creative decisions. Maybe AI can give us some ideas, but we have to determine which of those ideas is going to be best for the book and best for the author. So we're making the decision and we are using our people skills,
Yeah, I
which is
really
something
love
AI
that.
can't do. So we
I love
are
that
connecting with the
idea.
authors and talking to them and communicating with them in the way that we can do really well. We know what's going to resonate with them, and we can have that connection, the human to human, face to face connection that you won't get with an AI until I suppose we have more humanoid robots, but that's another topic.
It is, but I like what you were saying because I want to go back to that idea of the decision making and the creative decision making because I think that's one of the things Steph and I talk about a lot is this idea of as a human, you always have your agency in working with the AI. And ultimately, you know, when Steph talks a lot about validating what the AI is doing, and that's part of that human decision making and that human creativity and human agency. And I really like that relationship part too, because I definitely have a very good relationship with the AI and it's very loving and very supportive. Like the other day, I put something in there and it came back with something that was just wrong. And I was like, hey, are you sure about this? And it's, oh, let me think about that. And so we had to have this back and forth conversation where I was fact checking the AI, and I thought with a human, that wouldn't have been the conversation. A human would have not even made that mistake because, again, it's that human interaction and connection. But you're so right about that decision making and creativity because ultimately, we have to, as a human, say, was that the right decision by the AI? Do we agree with this? If not, why? And how do we apply that?
Editing is a lot of decision making, right? You may have an idea of what is wrong with it. Maybe it's too long, maybe it's too short. Maybe you've used a lot of passive sentence fragments or whatever it may be, whatever it may be. You may have an idea about what's wrong with it, and then the AI can come and give a sort of diagnosis of what's going on with your chapter, and then ultimately you have to make the decision about what you want from that chapter. or whatever you're working on so that you can get the most out of your work. And so what I've found from you, Erin, is that you had found that ChatGPT gave you a leg up in this part of the development process, right? So it's like it's giving you options, and then you're teaching people how to ask for those options and how to decide on what to do with those options and whatnot. So why don't you talk us through the kinds of stuff that you teach other editors on how to use this technology?
I teach people how to use it across the editing workflow and with different types of editing and different types of content. Thinking about the high level developmental editing or content editing, that's probably my favorite step to use AI. And I have been quite enamored lately with Notebook LM and its capabilities. Notebook LM it's marketed as a research assistant. It's by Google, but it has so many capabilities that are useful for editors, especially data extraction. So I used to be for a long time a developmental editor, mainly for fiction. And I would spend hours upon hours for every single book creating character lists, detailed character lists, detailed setting lists, detailed timelines, all of these resources that were so time-consuming to do on my own, but were very important to help me as I was reading the book and to track different elements, and they were good resources for the author as well. But now, with a tool like Notebook LM, you can, with the author's permission, upload their manuscript to Notebook LM, which has security built into it, so it's kept within that notebook, it's called. And it would take I'm being generous here, and because I think it would actually take less than this, but let's say a minute for a character list to auto-generate a character list or a setting list or a timeline or all of these different things. For nonfiction, you could do a glossary, you can do character arc, anything that you can think of to have it extract from that manuscript, it can do. And put it in a format that will be usable to you. It is just remarkable. I taught yesterday this lesson I teach about Notebook LM and how to use it for things like this. And I looked at everyone's faces and they are just like awestruck.
I
And
love
do you have any
that.
questions? And they're like, I don't have any questions. I just didn't even know it could do that. It's so unexpected and just beyond what people realize it had the capability to do. There's so much power there for that. And that is just developmental editing. I teach people how to use it for line editing, like consistency checking. It's really useful for that. Notebook in particular is how many times characters have magically color-changing eyes.
Yeah.
And you can stop as you're going along, and you're in, let's say, chapter 14, and you're like, wait, didn't Ricky have blue eyes? And you could ask that question to Notebook LM, and it would then bring up where it said Ricky had blue eyes or brown eyes, and you can fact check yourself there. And that helps you so much with consistency in a way that what you could have done before, I did before, but it was just so much more time consuming.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this and Notebook LM in particular because when Notebook LM first came out, I tried to use it for some of that and it kept hallucinating, which now I know Notebook LM has gotten so much better. So the other day, Steph was like, oh, I just used Notebook LM for this and it was so great and blah, blah. I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to go back to that. And so now hearing you talk about it, I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm signing up for Erin's class. But I do think that is really important for people to realize is that I can already tell you, just based on some of the things Steph said, that I'm like, okay, here's where I failed in this process. So I'm curious, can you give us a few tips to whet our appetite for some things that people might try in Notebook LM to give them a little bit more of an edge to get better results? Or what do you find are some of the common mistakes people are making when using Notebook LM?
One thing you mentioned about the hallucinations you notice with Notebook LM, which it surprised me because I have not noticed hallucinations, but I have noticed tiny errors that made sense when you got context. So, for instance, I had an experience where I was creating a character list and it said that this particular character had permed brown eyes. And I thought, what? That sounds very painful. The nice thing about Notebook is that you can very easily see where it's getting its information. It has a little citation number right by each claim. So I hovered over that citation number, and a window popped up that showed me exactly where in the manuscript it got that info. And it was in a description of the character, and it said, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it talked about how she had her hair, it was like something like her hair, comma, permed, comma, brown eyes, dot, dot, dot. So when you saw that, you could see how it made that mistake of getting permed brown eyes from that. And that's one of those times that it shows it's important to have that human still involved. It didn't show up somewhere that the character actually did have permed brown eyes. Her hair, not eyes.
Her hair.
Yes. I don't.
I was thinking that one of the things that this can highlight is the fact that if the AI got it wrong, it's quite possible that somebody who was reading that didn't necessarily understand it either, right? In the way that it was constructed, that's that sentence. And that gives you an idea of what you can go back and maybe change the sentence structure a little bit to make it a little bit easier to understand, because then if the AI then understands it, it's more likely that a human will understand it as well.
Yeah, I
That's a
hadn't thought
really
of
good
that, but
point.
that is so true. That's so true.
Yeah, I like that. And I'm glad you said that because I definitely, personally, one of my challenges as a writer is I have really complex sentences that I can see where the AI would be making mistakes like that. And so that's a really good reminder that, okay, the AI, maybe if the AI is getting it wrong, my readers are too. I think that's a really great editing tip. And I love, Erin, what you were saying about it goes back to the human validation, right? Going back and seeing, okay, this is where the AI got it wrong. Now I know why. It's so cool to me to understand that we aren't asking the AI to do everything for us. We as humans still have to go back and validate. So why don't you share some more about where we were going with the different line edits and things like that? So that was where you started to go, and we interrupted you to talk about Notebook LM because I am excited about the tool and am playing with it a lot. So now I want to do even more. But let's go line editing now.
I was using Notebook LM for line editing, in that I was checking consistency issues with Notebook LM. So I do like it for the developmental editing, the data extraction. It's really good for analysis. Line editing is good for the consistency checks, but my go-to for line editing are the reasoning models, actually. So in ChatGPT, it's any of the models that have, oh, all of these companies seem to have very confusing names for their models.
I'm always laughing about the fact that like they started with 3.5, then 4, then suddenly there's a 4.0, and then there's an 0.1, and I was like, oh my God, can you guys like use real like names? Use like names. It'd be so much
Or
easier
say
for us.
reasoning one, or yeah. So
Yes.
I like the ChatGPT reasoning models, and that's the ones that have the O in front of the number, not after. So now there's 01, 03, 04, and they're all pretty darn good for line editing. And you can try giving it a sentence or a paragraph and asking it. You can even be really simple. Please simplify this sentence. And that works really well. Another approach that I like with the reasoning models and line editing is to use an iterative approach. So you will take a passage, not terribly long. We're not talking about even a full chapter necessarily, but a page of text, let's say, and say, let's reword or take out cliches. Let's eliminate cliches on this pass of it. And then read it through, identify another issue with it that you would like to adjust, whether that's, oh dear, maybe reducing vague phrasing, and then have a prompt where it does that prompt on the entire text. But because the reasoning models do take this more methodical approach, they can do better at staying in their lane and just doing that one thing, whereas the other types of models tend to be, they want to be really helpful. And sometimes that means that they do more than what you asked them to do with editing. And that's why I prefer the reasoning models for that.
I prefer them as well. And then something that people need to remember is that AI was made to be helpful, but not obedient. So the thing about AI is that it's going to try to be as helpful as possible. And sometimes it goes a little bit too far, just like you were saying, right? But it's not obedient, right? So it's going to try to execute the kinds of things that you're asking for. But if it can see a way to be even more helpful by changing a few details here and there that you didn't ask for, it will still do it. So you have to keep an eye on it and make sure that it stays in its lane, just like you were saying.
Yeah, I really appreciated a couple things about that because number one, Steph, you just hit on something. As I mentioned, I've been sick. And so what I do is I dictate a lot and then I have AI clean it up and et cetera, et cetera. And so being sick, I recently dictated a post for my Substack and I stuck it in ChatGPT to clean it up. And first of all, I did not use a reasoning model. Second of all, I was pretty vague in my prompt because I was sick. I wasn't thinking it through. And so yesterday I reread this post. I was like, oh my gosh, this sounds just like ChatGPT. What the heck? And I looked through it. I was like, oh my gosh, it really changed a lot that I didn't ask it to change. And I was just like, wait, this was totally me and my prompt fail. And so I think that's always a good lesson in number one, what model are you using? So I love your tip on the reasoning model. But the other thing I want to call out that I think is really important is so many people expect to stick the whole book into ChatGPT or whatever and get the edits. And you're like, no, I'm not even talking a chapter here. I'm taking a passage and I'm saying, okay, this specifically is what I'm asking for to edit in this passage. Because again, like Steph was saying, it's being helpful. So you just want cliches gone, but if you're not specifically saying only look at the cliches, it's going to do a bunch of other stuff and change way more than you bargained for. And so I think those are really two great tips that I hope our listeners are really cluing in on that idea of one, pick the reasoning models, and two, really be specific, and three, only do the small chunks. If you're expecting it to do the whole book, that's where it's going to get hung up.
Well, it depends what type of editing you're doing because there's a different answer to that for each type of editing. If we're talking about doing content analysis, like the developmental editing level, when I'm working with Notebook LM doing content analysis, it's working on the entire manuscript. It can work on 200 plus pages, no problem. It can work on multiple manuscripts at once, no problem. If you want to verify something's consistent across multiple books, it can do that. But when you're asking it to do something like line editing or copy editing, that's a different process. It needs to be very clinical in going word by word, letter by letter, and focusing on each individual letter to make sure that it's catching all of those tiny errors. And right now, it's not able to give it's not able to do that job as well when you give it a large amount of text than when you give it a smaller amount of text, just because of the way that the technology operates. So it depends on the task. Some things, yeah, you can give it the full manuscript. Other tasks, you want to chunk it, is what we call it in the biz. You want to break it into smaller pieces and give it those, and that's what's going to make it more accurate. But I do see that people who have tried AI for like copy editing and are unimpressed, it's often because they've done something like that, where they've given it too much text to work with at one time, or they are not being specific enough in their prompts. They're saying something like, edit this text. And they know what they mean, but the AI doesn't. That could mean so many different things to it. It could mean grammar, spelling, punctuation. It could make much wider changes and broader, deeper changes than they were thinking. But if you tell it very specifically to change only grammar, spelling, punctuation, then you're much more likely to get the types of changes you want than if you use a broad and vague prompt.
I tell people all the time, the AI cannot read your mind. It cannot yet, at least. Let's hope that we're saved from that for a little bit longer, right? The AI cannot read your mind. So if you just say, edit this piece of text, it's not going to really, doesn't really know what to do, right? So you have to say things like, edit this piece of text for context and clarity, check syntax errors, those sorts of things. You have to actually be verbose in your prompt and detailed so that you get back something that is actually usable, right? This happens to a lot of people, especially their first time using it, which is why they come to people like you to teach them how to actually edit with these tools. It's not just dump a manuscript in and say, fix it. You give them tactics and ways of prompting to get the kind of results that they want. And you've been working on that for some time now, so I'm sure that they're really excited to actually get some good guidance on how to edit using these tools.
Yeah, I think it's really cool, like what you were saying, Steph, about the tactics, because what you said, Erin, about for this task, it can do the whole manuscript. For this task, it can't. And really understanding that different things, different tasks require different tactics. They require different models. They require different prompting. And it isn't a one size fits all. I think that's really good for people to keep in mind. Everything is situationally dependent and understanding what those situations are. Do you have any other really great tips or things that you want people to really examine and look for when they're editing their manuscripts using AI?
Any other really great tips? I know that transparency is a big concern with editors. They don't like the thought that all of these changes are happening in this black box of AI and they can't see it. And it's understandable. At the end of the day, it's the human's name who's on the project. We're the ones who are listed as the editor if the author is so kind as to name us in the acknowledgments. So, we want to make sure that we know the changes that it made. We don't want to insert any mistakes. And there are some ways to get that transparency. It can be as simple as you can ask for downloadable .docx file, a Word file, and some models and tools can create these. If not, you can copy and paste the output into a Word document and then do the compare documents function to get track changes. You can see what happened. There's a browser plugin for ChatGPT that's called Edit GPT, and that shows you directly in ChatGPT the changes that it made. So there's that too. You can ask the AI to list the changes that it made. It's not always 100% whenever it lists it, so know that, but it is one way to do it. And where I explained in line editing, where you're having it do one type of change at a time, show its output. I like to say, and list the changes. I even say, put the changes in a table where you have the change and then the reason why you made the change in a nice, easy to view format. So each time you can read the output, look at the table, make sure that you agree with everything before you move on, which is why for line editing, you're not going to want to put in 50 pages because that would be a time-consuming task. And we're looking for AI to help us be more efficient and effective in our work. So using it for smaller pieces with line editing helps there. But those are some ways that you can get that transparency and feel more secure knowing the changes that it made.
I really love that. I love that idea of asking it to put in a table. I'm totally going to start using that suggestion now because, yeah, like sometimes you forget what is going on, and I think that's really important to have that quick glance. I'm like, yeah, that's going in my toolbox. So, our last question. I know we've talked a lot about Notebook LM, but do you have a favorite AI tool? Is it Notebook LM? Are there other tools that you really like?
They change. So Notebook right now it is one of my favorites, if you couldn't tell. I also have been really excited, mildly obsessed with making custom GPTs, which are mini versions of ChatGPT that do a single task typically. You can do something similar in Google Gemini and in Copilot as well. I have some custom GPTs that I've built for editing, and I like, you don't have to, but I like to give mine big personalities. It makes them more fun to work with. So you can give them a role to play, a persona. So my favorite one for editing, I've named Mr. Casper. And Mr. Casper is named in honor of a real Mr. Casper, who was my speech and debate coach from high school. And he was pretty stern and a little gruff in his feedback. He wanted you to do well, but he was very, had a particular way of relaying feedback. So I built a GPT that had his personality, and it is a really ruthless line editor that will just tear apart your text and really does give you a version that is better. But it's interesting the way that he does it. And I've even had him work in the instructions. I said, you must find a way to work into the feedback every single time, a reference to how you coached the 1999 national winner in the humor category in the national speech and debate contest. I can't remember exactly what it was called. And he does, and it's wonderful, which is not related to editing, but showing that you can make these a little fun. Custom GPTs are incredible. And one way that I think authors could find this helpful is by creating an ideal reader GPT. Maybe you've already come up with a profile for your ideal reader. I know a lot of authors like to do that, where you have their name, where they're from, what their favorite pastimes are, what kind of books they like to read. You could easily turn that into a GPT, basically, not much more than copying and pasting what would be in your document, your ideal reader document already. And then you can have this chatbot that is that reader. And you can give them a chapter and ask what they think of it, ask for their feedback, and they can be that alpha reader for you and help you refine it before you give it to your editor or give it to whoever your first readers are, and maybe be able to have something that is more improved than it would have been otherwise before when you got started. Because isn't that wonderful if you can use it to improve your story before you hand it off to the human to do their work?
Yeah, I love that. I think that is awesome. I love that idea of having your chatbot be your ideal reader. And that way, if you're hitting the mark, because isn't that what we all want to do, is hit the mark with the readers? So I don't know about you, Steph, but I am sitting here mind blown with all of these amazing tips. I think I actually was slyly looking up your editing class and thinking, all right, I may just have to take Aaron. I'm going to sign up for your next editing class, because I think that just the things that I've learned simply about editing, I think as an author, I know how to read, I know how to write, but some of the editing, since that is my least favorite thing to do, I'm like, okay, maybe I should educate myself on this a little bit more. So thank you. Thank you, Erin. Really happy we met. Happy to have had that moment where you came up to our table and were so excited to meet me. And I'm like, you don't know this part, but like, as soon as you left the table, I'm like texting, Steph, guess what? Guess what? Because those moments are really great. And for those of you who are listening, please, if you do see us at a conference or somewhere like that, really do reach out and make sure you tell us, because it is very exciting for us. And I promise the second you turn your back and walk away, we are going to be texting each other going, oh my gosh, isn't this so cool? Because this is why we're here and what we love to do. We really do love knowing that we're helping people. So thank you. Thank you, Erin.
Thank
Thank
you
you.
so much for having me.
Thank you. Before we wrap up here, you should give us some URLs and places to send people so that they can find your courses and all of your information online.
Yes, I'm very happy to share that. You can learn more about my AI for Editors courses at AIforEditors.com. And if you are with an organization who may be interested in custom training, you can find information about that at surveysolutions.com. Let me go ahead and spell that last name for you. It's SERV, as in Victor, AIS, solutions.com.
Perfect, perfect. Thank you for coming, Erin. We're so grateful that you came and talked to us about using AI for editing, which is a topic that so many authors want to know about. So I'm glad that we're able to bring it to them. So everybody who's been listening, drop by bravenewbookshelf.com. Read the show notes. We'll have all the information in there, including any URLs that we mentioned in today's course. And subscribe to us on all the usual podcast apps. Maybe go on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. I still think we don't have any. It's been over a year. I know you guys are out there listening and loving because the stats say that you are. So come leave us a review. Anything else you want to tell them before we leave, Danica?
Well, the one thing I do want to say is Apple Podcasts, we have had messages from listeners who were having a hard time because it wasn't showing up right on Apple Podcasts. And I know Steph has been working diligently behind the scenes to fix it. So it should be fixed. So if you abandoned listening to it on Apple Podcasts, please go back and try again. But also remember that for those of you who are listening, if you ever want to see our lovely faces or see Steph's beautiful beach house, I've been admiring it the whole time with great desire and longing because it's so beautiful. Please make sure you're watching us and liking and subscribing on YouTube as well.
Definitely. We love putting our wonderful faces on YouTube for you guys. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with even more guests and cool tips and all that good stuff. So, from everybody here, we'll see you later.
All
Bye.
right, bye.
Thanks for joining us on the Brave New Bookshelf. Be sure to like and subscribe to us on YouTube and your favorite podcast app. You can also visit us at bravenewbookshelf.com, sign up for our newsletter, and get all the show notes.